think we'll call the Committee on Business, Industry, and Jobs to order. We could start without a quorum. I've been briefed a little bit about this first bill, and I don't think there's any controversy at all. Even the chief boiler inspector is on board. With that brief introduction, Senator Solon, this is Senate File 212, modifying boiler regulations. Welcome to the committee, Senator.
Thank you, Senator Metzen. Mr. Chair and committee members, I appreciate the opportunity to present this bill before business, industry, and jobs. It's simple legislation, and it addresses a technicality because of an ownership change that deals with the operation of a paper mill in my district. Currently, there is an exception in the boiler regulations section of statute for that paper mill, New Page Corporation, because they have turbines on site powered by steam boilers at a location nearby, which are owned by the City of Duluth and operated by state-licensed employees of Minnesota Power. The exception references municipal, but because the boilers, which are currently owned by the City of Duluth, will soon be purchased by Minnesota Power, the word municipal and district should be deleted. Nothing changes with the operation of the paper mill, New Page. This bill simply acknowledges the ownership change. If this change is not made, New Page will incur significant costs to hire additional staff. The chief boiler inspector for the state of Minnesota, Joel Amato, supports this change, and you should have a letter in your front of you.
Senator Solon, we do have that in our.
Okay, and he's available for questions today. There is no opposition to this bill that I know of. I ask that it be considered for the consent calendar, actually. And I have with me here Pat Moore from New Page, who will present any testimony or answer any questions that you might have.
Okay, any questions with the committee, Senator Day? I think we're going to, my opinion, we'll put it on a consent calendar, but I think we need 9 members before we can actually do that. So I think you can feel any discussion by the members.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Day?
No, I don't have any problem with the bill at all, but was the way it was originally written, was that just because it was Duluth that they had municipal and this district in here, or are there other cities that do this kind of stuff?
I would be guessing. So I have somebody here from Minnesota Power or Mr. Moore. I'm not sure if either.
Yeah, we should, thank you for coming down, as long as you took the time to come down, you might say a few words.
Okay, Mr. Chair, Senator, to answer that question, this is a unique situation. When the mill was built in 1986, it was a partnership between Minnesota Power and Pentair, and part of siting it in Duluth was to be able to utilize the steam plant that was existing on a nearby site. At the time, to help with financing, the city bought the boilers, 2 boilers, from Minnesota Power for a dollar so that we could access public funding to put the adequate pollution control equipment and upgrade the boilers for using biomass. as a result, we have a paper mill which sits about a half a mile away from the steam plant, and in the paper mill we have one relatively small turbine.
Senator
Chairman,
is that enough?
I'm fine. No, yeah, you know what? Fine. It just took me a minute here. Now I'm finally looking at it, and I asked a question, and then it says paper making facility. Yeah. I was thinking of other cities that had.
Okay.
I think this is a very unique
It is the only one like it.
That I've been told. There's nothing else quite like this. I think you can, Senator and your people, I think you can feel safe if you want to leave, and we'll take care of this. And if there's fireworks, we'll get right back to you, but I think we're all right.
Mr. Chair, the reason I'm pressing at this time and would appreciate it going to the consent calendar is because it is scheduled to be sold on March 1st, and so it's very important that it be.
Yeah, we'll move it out of here. We need, I believe,
passed by that time.
9 folks here, and we have 6, so.
Okay. Thank you for your time.
We'll take care of it.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
You. Appreciate it. And I believe every member here agrees with the consent calendar,
Chairman,
too.
So. Yes.
All right, we're going to get we're going to hear from the Department of Labor and Industry some updates. Mr. Speaker Sweegum will come and tell us what's happening and some of the things that aren't happening as fast as we some of us thought were going to happen. If that makes sense,
including myself, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, yeah.
Mr.
Okay.
Chairman,
okay, welcome, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very, very much. And I've got it figured out now with the rest of our bills that come forward from labor and industry. All we're going to do is have the testifier say Mr. Amato supports the bill. And it's just going to sail through here. As long as those supports it, we're okay. Is
it
that
worked. It worked so far for the last one.
Okay. That's the same happens at the department. If he says it's okay, we just nod our heads. So.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you for the opportunity. As I understand, Mr. Chairman, maybe just a five-minute briefing overview of the department and maybe 5 minutes on particular issues of interest or of controversy that may be coming before you this legislative session, Mr. Chairman. Would that be okay?
That'd be fine, but I'm surprised that Speaker Sweegum would only go 20 minutes or 10. What did you say, 10 minutes here, 10 minutes there? That's
fine.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Continue.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Members, just to give you particular specific information about your Department of Labor and Industry as it affects the lives of peoples throughout the state of Minnesota, let me give you just three or four examples of how we serve the best interests of the state, how your employees down there serve the best interests of the state. Example one I'll use would be being in the chairman's district this fall. When we were down there to recognize one of his local businesses, Tape Mark, I believe it was, Mr. Chairman, in regards to their safety standards that they've set at that company to meet standards over and above our national standards for OSHA to keep their people safe at this individual company. We gave them an award, the MnSTAR Award, if you remember, Mr. Chairman,
sure.
In relationship to the work that they have done between their between the management, between labor, and between our Department of OSHA consultation. Example two would be going throughout Minnesota to make sure that we enforce labor law from Labor Standards Unit as it is in law. We have made sure and incited, investigated, and give citations to businesses that may be involved in the establishment of serving liquor at an establishment and hiring 14 and 15-year-olds at that establishment. We investigated, enforced, and significantly penalized so we could get the attention that 14-year-olds are not supposed to be working in places that that sell liquor. And we have done that and have done so. Mr. Chairman, there are numerous examples of labor standards laws that have been enforced all the way from prevailing wage in southern Minnesota at Mankato, where we have investigated and enforced penalties upon businesses to make sure that back pay was made for misclassification of workers that should have been classified differently in the prevailing wage reimbursement. We recovered, in one case, about $28,000 of payment for those workers who were misclassified on a prevailing wage job. Very quickly, Mr. Chairman, 5 units in the Department of Labor and Industry. The first unit, and I will start with them, because if we do our job right in this unit, it will take care of some of the problems in the rest of the department, and that's OSHA. We have a wonderful OSHA department. We spend about $24 million. Mr. Chairman, about 99 employees that are divided into 2 units, one a compliance unit, the other a consultation unit. The compliance unit is one that goes out, enforces, investigates, and penalizes job sites, businesses that do not provide the appropriate safety, health and safety for our workers in the state. The other unit is a consultation unit, which kind of goes out and educates, works with businesses, works with job sites, works with labor and management folks on a job site to educate and ensure up front that their businesses are safe without compliance citations and penalties being brought forward. Again, about 99 employees there. are very, very simple, and it's a very, very simple goal, is to make sure everybody goes home at night the same way they come to work in the morning. If that happens, we do not need the workers' compensation unit. But unfortunately, people do get hurt on the job site. Our workers' compensation unit is 159 FTEs, 159 employees. Oh, excuse me, 159 million, 90 employees. 90 employees, $159 million to run that department. The majority of that money, of the $159 million, is benefits that we pay to individuals who are either receive supplementary benefits or receive second injury fund benefits or benefits for workers who were not covered for whatever reason on a job site, uninsured individuals who got hurt and should have been covered on the job site that were not.
This is at workers' comp slide. They should be next time we'll number them. But,
yeah, you do have a slide there. I know it would be
number four or so, workers' compensation. Then it goes on to OSHA, which
Yep, 159 and 142, again, Mr. Chairman, of the 159 actually goes out in benefits. The rest is used to basically run the department, do the administrative work of the department itself. Mr. Chairman, if I could go on to the third unit very, very quickly, that would be the construction codes. Let's see, if you were following in your sheets, it would be, well, can't find it. Must be before the workers' compensation unit, then.
That's after. It's about after. six or seven.
Six or seven? Oh, okay.
Remember, see that construction code service?
Construction codes, yes.
Six or seven back into the, okay.
Construction codes and licensing division members, and Mr. Chairman, is a division that operates basically by fees, approximately $65 million of fees. We have 163 full-time equivalent employees right there. And they issue, test, and issue all the professional licenses in the state, from high-pressure piping licenses to plumbing licenses to electrical licenses to contractor licenses, about 110,000 licenses, professional and occupational licenses through the CCLD unit. Then we have the labor standards and apprenticeship division, 19 employees there. In the Labor Standards and Apprenticeship Division, about $3.5 million. By the way, Mr. Chairman and members, as you look at the significant problem we have before us facing the state of Minnesota this year with the huge budget deficit that you, I know you are all struggling with, this is the only unit that receives general fund money in my department. We receive approximately $900,000+ of general fund money. For this unit, appropriately so, because you would think to apply, enforce, investigate labor standard laws, Mr. Chairman, that is the due and proper purpose of the state of Minnesota and should be funded with general fund money. Now, that is the only unit that receives general fund money. All the other units that I'm speaking about are either funded by federal dollars, by fees collected on plumbing licenses, for instance, or by workers' compensation premium assessments. Again, I want to state that this is the only unit that gets general fund money. We do enforce minimum wage. We enforce child labor laws. We enforce prevailing wage. We do investigations there. Mr. Chairman, your legislature was good enough 2 years ago to give us three additional persons in this unit to investigate and enforce the prevailing wage issue. And then lastly, Mr. Chairman, well, I should mention the apprenticeship division, too. Rather, that's part of this unit. We have apprenticeship programs that we run in the state, six full-time equivalents we have in our department to approve and run those apprenticeship programs. They are funded from the Workforce Development Fund. Those funds for apprenticeship come from Workforce Development. Lastly, Mr. Chairman, we have a basically our general unit, our support division, which is supports all the other units. It's everybody from our IT folks to our research and statistics folks, from our legal folks. We have a legal department of 12 attorneys to our communications folks. That is 118 persons within our general support unit division. Mr. Chairman, if I could then, let me refer to maybe three or four issues, which I think this body has some interest in.
And before that, if you don't mind, Commissioner, we're going to Senator Day is going to move Senate File 212 and the Petrie-Solan bill we just heard to the consent calendar. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, motion prevails. Continue on. How do you like the way we kind of move things around?
I like it a lot, but I noticed in the voting, Mr. Chairman, if I can make the comment, Senator Sparks looked at his younger sister to see if we should vote yes or no on it.
No, you don't answer to it. He's a no.
I hope that was a good bill.
That's one of those trust me ones.
Okay. Right? Senator, you should both look at Mr. Amato. We decided that earlier, that if he shakes his head, you would vote that way. Mr. Chairman, the three issues that that I will raise, you might have other issues, obviously, of our department as well. The first, a very difficult one, the independent contractor law that was passed by this body in 2007, signed by the governor in 2007, was to become effective for the first time in January 1st of 2009, or about 3 weeks ago. Mr. Chairman, we followed through with the law that you passed, promulgated what I thought were reasonable rules to address the law and make sure we follow through with the intent of the law. Mr. Chairman, we very honestly have run into some difficulties. The difficulty, the idea of the law was basically to determine that persons would become employees. They'd be determined to be employees unless they applied to the department for an independent evaluation, an independent exemption certificate. We call it the independent contractor exemption certificates. Mr. Chairman, we had anticipated from the department, and now this goes back 2 years ago, in a fiscal note that there would be some $2.5 million brought in through the fee process that's fee-supported and fee-run, that there'd be some 25,000 applications that would come forward in that fiscal note. Mr. Chairman, I have to sit here before you to tell you today that, members, that there has been significantly less applications coming forward than we anticipated. In fact, as of Monday, members, we had only granted 860 independent contractor exemption certificates. We had anticipated there'd be 25,000. The original fiscal note, I think prior to that, was 40,000. This is going back to 2006, 2007. Representative
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I remember the bill. I just can't remember who were the people that would be applying for these exemption certificates. Are they? Maybe you can just explain back up a little bit with what we did.
Construction only. So focus in on construction. Construction only, and those individuals who work for somebody else, but are not employees of that general contractor, who are supposed to have met the nine-factor test we have in law to be an independent contractor. The rules that we promulgated brought forward, we thought, the appropriate documentation to be able to justify and document whether someone be an independent contractor or not. If they're not, if they don't show the appropriate documentation, they would be deemed as an employee. If you remember, Mr. Chairman, Senator Scheid, I think the bill was a little bit of a result of a legislative auditor study that said we had some significant problems with workers' comp, unemployment comp, and taxes not being paid by supposed independent contractors in the state. It applies to construction only. It applies if you have to have this certificate if you work for a general. You do not have to have it if you're going to work specifically and only for a homeowner. So if you were going to go out and hire someone, you don't have to verify that they have a certificate exemption. If a general hires them, they would have to.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, our problem ends up to be this. We had anticipated $250,000 or $2.5 million to come in by fees. To this date on Monday, we have brought in approximately $160,000, significantly less than we anticipated. And it's very. In order to fund the department, Mr. Chairman, to fund this unit, we basically transferred from CCLD, the Combined Construction Licensing Division, $600,000. Ultimately, that was supposed to have been paid back. But, Mr. Chairman, for whatever reason, and there's lots of reasons that people could state, from maybe the law is working the way people anticipated, and people will be deemed employees rather than independent contractors. So give us that maybe the law is working. Secondly, there's been a significant increase within the Secretary of State's office for persons with limited liability corporations, LLCs, and many of those may have been construction contractors. Thirdly, Mr. Chairman, as you know, those of you who have been out in your districts as of late know that construction is not doing well at this time. It's an economic slowdown. There may have been significant numbers of persons who just basically are not working, have left the field. They're going to put their construction company on ice for a year or two, whatever. It has been a significant slowdown. Fourthly, you have the bad time of the year. You know, it's January. Not a lot of construction being done now, and maybe we need more outreach to those persons that do need this exemption certificate. And, you know, there's probably other reasons. Another reason might be, Mr. Chairman, I think it was in a tax bill that this legislature saw fit to put on a 2% withholding on independent contractors. And maybe that's moved people towards the LLCs. It's very, very possible. Whatever reason, we're just not getting the dollars in. We're not getting the applications in. And, Mr. Chairman, unfortunately, and very, very difficult, I'm going to have to reduce the number of persons that we hired in that unit. We had originally planned, the fiscal note had planned for us to hire 14 people. We hired 10 because we were going to ramp up. Now, unfortunately, members, we have to ramp down. We just can't support it with the dollars that are coming in. It's not a fun thing.
Senator Boniff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, that is distressing and, you know, compiled with all that we're hearing about every single day. You know, it's not surprising, but I can't help but wonder if there shouldn't be a different approach than layoffs. You know, I say that in the face of seeing what Target has done and Best Buy has done, and it just seems to me, wouldn't everybody prefer to make less than to lose jobs? I mean, are we doing enough to say, you know, and this is our pot of money, we have you, we have made a commitment to you, we're going to reallocate the money we have, and everybody's going to make less. You know, I know people could say, well, would you be willing to do that? The answer is yes. I feel like that we should take a leadership role as the state, that we have a social responsibility to keep people working, and that we, you know, every layoff is a cost to society. Every layoff is a family that doesn't know how they're going to have health care. I just feel stronger about this layoff issue than I think anything else right now, that I would like us to look at the economics a little bit differently and find a different way. So I'm not telling you how to manage your department, but I'm asking you if you've considered that.
Yeah, that's good comments. So part of the problem here is that these would be paid for out of the fees that aren't coming in, and, you know, so it's very
Chairman,
tough.
Senator Boniff, I would certainly tend to agree with you. The difficulty we have is that pot of money you talk about is 7% of what we anticipated it would be.
Yeah, that's
significant. It's not like we can ask people to work for $10,000 a year either, you know, which we'd probably have to do if we were going to keep all 10 people in our unit and still be fee supported. Now, if we can find some money in the general fund, you were supposed to smile. You see,
you're supposed to smile. Good luck.
Nobody's smiling. Senator Metzen, Senator Bonhoeff, Right now, we take money from our CCLD unit, and that's probably unfair, too, to ask a plumber or an electrician or the contractor's permits to increase their fees to support another unit that the fees aren't coming in. It might not be fair to that electrician or that plumber to do that. In fact, it probably wouldn't be. I have done this, Senator Bonoff, so you know. We are first going to try to make sure that within the qualified positions we have at DLI, we do have, I think, three open positions today. If any of those individuals are qualified for those positions, they will get the first nod for those positions. We are also trying to make sure that the individuals who came from other agencies, they obviously have bumping rights, and they will probably be able to bump back. I know one individual, Department of Transportation, and we have three or four that might be able to bump. I just don't know where I can get the money. You know, I do understand your comment about, you know, maybe everybody keep working, happy we got a job, and, you know, don't worry about, you know, if we have a 2 or 4 or 8% increase, you know, just as long as we can hold a job in this time right now. But at the pot of money being so small, I don't know what other options I have.
Thank you.
Lead off, Ariel.
Mr. Chairman. Yeah. Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Commissioner, a couple things. I wondered, first of all, if the handful of people or this number of people, the 860
as of Monday.
Are they from any particular area of the state, or does it tend to be Twin Cities? And then also, maybe you can answer that.
Mr. Chairman, to answer that question, Senator Scheid, if you don't mind, I'm going to call upon my friend who is still working for me or with us for 3 days.
Ariel, if you want to come forward.
You probably all know Ariel. She's my friend. She went to school with my children. And unfortunately, very honestly, you see before you a direct result of our reductions.
Thank you for having me.
But I will help her in any way I can to find her employment and a job, as I've committed to her. But the question,
she's getting
maybe
unemployment.
You can answer the questions.
Go ahead and repeat, Senator Scheid.
Well, I wondered if the 860-some people who have applied for the exemption certificate
geographic.
From in any particular part of the state.
Sure.
And then the other part of my question is, what I don't recall how we, yeah. I mean, I know there was the legislative auditor's report telling us that there was this problem. How do we know that there's still just people just not complying?
Sure. Mr. Chair, Senator Scheid, there are 860 applications that have been approved, been issued the independent contractor exemption certificate. There are probably another 1,000 that are either waiting to be processed, were incomplete, so we sent in a missing information letter, et cetera. This is reaching all corners of the state. We're finding that, especially in greater Minnesota, people do have an understanding of this. As we spoke to a lot of insurance professionals and tax professionals, who are usually working with independent contractors, some exclusively in the construction industry. So we were able to reach them. Did I address your question?
Well, yes. Mr. Chairman, I just wondered, I guess that goes to how we're finding out. I mean, do we have a sense that there might be a lot more people out there who should be doing this that aren't?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Scheid, absolutely. We estimate that there are over 60,000 people in the state who are independent contractors, but please understand that these people are sometimes drywallers, do floor covering, or are painters. And so their business might be a paintbrush or the tools that they have for the job, and it only includes them. So in the type of industry or economic climate that we have right now for this industry, we're in trouble. So the people who we were trying to bring out of the woodwork now have more reason to hide, I believe. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ariel, a page, as you remember, for this committee before
You got her two-month job with Commissioner Smith.
It would be 9 months now. But Mr. Chairman, Ariel is representative of the other 10 persons we have there. She told me yesterday it's the best unit we have at Labor and Industry, is your direct words.
Absolutely, the best team.
And I believe that. By the way, Ariel was the first one hired in that unit. Helped us develop and promulgate the rules, helped us with the rules, and helped us with the application form as we ramped up to the first application being a possibility on September 1st.
Senator Tomazoni.
Commissioner, maybe you should get rid of that person that made that calculation.
Keep Ariel?
The 25,000, whatever that was.
Mr. Chair, I want to thank the commissioner for his kind words. I don't think we're sure about who wrote the fiscal note at that time, but I think it's an issue of where all these people are now in the climate.
Yeah.
Okay, you're pretty quiet today, Thomas. Any you want to?
All right, continue fortunately, on. Fortunately, in this area, we did not hire all 14 persons. We hired only 10 as we began, and we're going to ramp up to the needed 14 as the applications came in. Members, I also want you to know that that does not mean very directly that those 10 persons have been sitting in cubicles or offices without anything to do over the last five-month period of time. There have been numerous. For every application, there are probably 10 phone calls you get or visits at the department where you have to go down and speak with individuals, help them through the application form. We have also used some members from this unit to help us in the other licensing divisions. And specifically, we're going to engage Ariel to help us on a part-time basis here at the legislature as a legislative liaison. Now, obviously, things have changed with the numbers as they are, but I don't want you to think that we've had 10 people sitting in a cubicle with only 860 applications for the last 5 months, because that's far from the truth.
No, absolutely not, Mr. Chair, Mr. Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, if I could go on, I'd certainly go back to this if you want to. Workers' compensation reform, members, always a very controversial and confrontational issue before this body. It is my hope and my desire that we will keep a confrontation on this issue away from your decision making, and we will bring you a significant reform bill, members, this year that is basically agreed to and will have controversy removed from it. Members, you're going to have enough controversy in trying to solve this $5 billion deficit that is before you, and you're going to have enough difficulty and enough people mad at you doing that. My hope is, and our Workers' Compensation Advisory Council met today. We're meeting again on February 11th. We've had a significant number of stakeholders involved over the summer and committees to try to bring forward a significant reform bill. I will tell you very honestly, we probably took a step backwards last week rather than a step ahead. The bill will be aimed at, if I have my druthers, the two most important stakeholders we have in the system, and that is the injured worker and the business that pays the premium. All the recommendations coming from the committees we've set up and or the commissioner are aimed at those two, the injured worker and the business that pays the premium. Now, understand there's a whole host of other stakeholders, all needed, all necessary. Every one of them are important in the system because they help us move through the system and get the injured worker back to work one way, shape, or form. But need to focus back on the injured worker and the business that pays the premium. All the other stakeholders are service providers, including myself. Part of my salary gets paid by our workers' compensation assessment. And hopefully our bill will be significant. I will give you just two graphs that you need to shouldn't remember before we go ahead and maybe bring you a bill a month from now. And Representative Tomazoni remembers me doing this up at where? Where were we at?
Valentini's.
Up in Chisholm, right? Up in Chisholm. The two graphs you need to remember are one going down like this. The number of cases in the state are going down and down significantly each and every year. Less injured workers per 100 workers today than there was 2 years ago, than there was 10 years ago, than there was 20 years ago. lots of good reasons for it. Maybe to some degree it's OSHA and people becoming more educated in regards to workplace safety. It might be new technology that is available. It might be new equipment that's available. As Senator Tomasoni knows, lumbering is a lot safer today than it was 20 years ago. The forestry industry is much safer. It might be the resources businesses are putting into workplace safety, which is significant. But the number of injured workers is going down. Good, good graph. The other graph, though, goes like this. And that's the cost of the system, and the cost per case is going up and up rather dramatically. If they were going somewhat in parallel, we wouldn't probably raise our eyebrows or have a concern. But when the costs are going up significantly, and there's lots of reasons for that, lots of stakeholders, including myself, including my department that does dispute resolution, that's part of the costs. But so is litigation. So is rehabilitation. So is medical costs. Those are all costs that are rising rather dramatically. And with the two lines going like this, we're going to try to bring you a significant reform bill to help improve the system in the best interests of the injured worker and the business that pays the premium. We are not successful yet at this point in bringing together the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council. As you all know, that's the final decision will be the WCAC, six members of business, six members of labor by statute, so it's going to have to be a balanced bill. We'll try, Mr. Chairman. And then lastly, because I know a couple members on this committee have spoken to me about this, prevailing wage. Let me address that issue very quickly. As I stated about 10 minutes ago, you were good to give us three additional employees in the prevailing wage labor standards unit. We have done a number of investigations. We have certainly recovered significant dollars for individuals that were misclassified on individual jobs throughout the state. Our investigative unit under Rosalind Wade is working very, very well. I trust, Mr. Chairman, that you will continue to see our department put its resources towards making sure that the prevailing wage law, as in statute, is enforced. With that, members, maybe what I'd do, Mr. Chairman, just open up for comments, questions, direction, advice, criticism, whatever it may be that would be forthcoming.
Any questions of, I don't know, how many years ago was it we set up that Workers' Compensation Reform Commission, but it's one of the better things we've done around here to get everything, every little individual issue not coming to this body and the House, you know. So that your group, the way I understand it, kind of hammers things out and comes back, and it's comprised of half business types and half labor unions people, and do the work over there, then come to us and what you're doing. And I think it's very successful from what I've seen over the years.
Mr. Chairman, I think it was part of the 1992
was that it?
Reform bill. They are diligently working. I won't tell you that their decisions are easy.
No.
You know, when you try to, the folks on the 12 folks on the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council probably have no greater difference than you do when you try to make decisions in this very confrontational system at times. Same number of interest groups, you know, approach them as might approach you. But, Mr. Chairman, I've been impressed at the common ground that they've tried to bring forward. And as you remember, we did have a bill last year that did pass, thank you, enhanced some benefits, saved some costs, I think was a good step. I'm hoping to improve upon that step with a stride this year. But, again, it's kind of in their hands more than yours and mine right now.
So you met again today?
We met today from about 9 to 11:30, and we will come back together again on February 11th. And I've kind of given them that drop date, dead date of February 11th, because it will take us some drafting time after that. Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure if your first committee deadline dates have been set or not.
I don't think so. No.
I stated today it would probably be around the end of March. I suspect it will be around the end of March. So I told the council today that February 11th would hopefully be a time where they'll make the final decisions, drop dead dates to me. Is it going to take us a couple weeks of drafting and then to get it into the hands of well, Mr. Chairman, we will probably Senator Bach would probably be our chief author because he is your representative on the council. He is there. Senator Bach and Senator Gimsey are the two Senate representatives there.
Okay. Joel, who is this for our information?
I had another appointment.
You had another appointment.
Who's on the House side?
On the House side, it is Representative Gunther and Representative Mike Nelson.
Who's my representative?
Okay, you're getting by.
Mr. Chairman.
Well, not that easy. Okay. Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, you talked about prevailing wage, and there were some issues in southern Minnesota, I know, about some contractors that kept violating the prevailing wage law. And I know Roslyn Wade does a great job in that department in enforcing it. And we gave you some enforcement people last year and some enforcement abilities that you didn't have before. But there was this standard about, I think it's willful and repeated, and it seems to me I heard that the same company kept doing it, doing the same thing. And there is a provision in law to actually fine the companies, which wasn't done. Is there an explanation behind why the company's wrists weren't slapped or why they weren't, I mean, what went on there exactly?
Okay, let me try to explain it the best I can without running into any data privacy issues that I might be offending. Mr. Chairman, Senator Tomasoni, the new law began in July 1st of 2007. We did hire the three investigators you refer to. I think we had them hired by August or September of 2007. They do investigate upon complaints, and they get lots of them, by the way. They get lots of complaints from both sides. They do a great job at investigation. We have really good people there. Senator Tomasoni, before I specifically refer to the Mankato situation, members, I want you to know this, that Roslyn, myself, and the department units have met, and we have impartially decided that our department will not be used. There are other interests outside this room that want to use us, the department, as a weapon. There are interests outside this room that want to use us as a shield. And I think you can respect and understand those various interests. We have, I think, appropriately decided that our department in enforcement will be impartial, that we'll address the law. We'll make sure that the law gets applied, investigated, and enforced. But we will not be used as either a weapon or a shield. I think it would be inappropriate for us as an impartial department applying your law to be used in that way by either interest. In Mankato. Last year, and by the way, this was at the University of Mankato, at Mankato State. There was an investigation which we did do. There was an investigation where we investigated and found, I think we recovered wages in the tune of about $28,000 for employees that were misclassified or not paid the prevailing wage for the appropriate classification. Senator Tomasoni is exactly correct. The words in the law of 2007 are willful and repeated. Ms. Wade, and by the way, I agree with her. I think she made it very, very clear to the department or to the legislature, she says, when the law was passed, that the July 1st, 2007 date would be a starting date for the question of willful and repeated in law, that we were not going to go back to potential problems that existed or assumed to existed back in 2005 or 2002 or 2000 in regards to determining willful and repeated, the law, the words in the law. So that clock, Ms. Wade tells me, started on July 1st, 2007. There are those who might want us to go back previous to that, and our department has determined that that is not what the law is. The clock started July 1st, 2007, prospectively, and And she did tell me very directly that she did share that with members of the legislature. I think maybe yourself, Senator Tomassoni, when the law did pass.
There was only one violation from that time forward?
That would not be exactly fair to say. Investigated at that time in Mankato, there were two buildings that were going up, by the same business that was being investigated, but they were being done at the same time, the same job. So it was not treated as a repeat at that time. Now, there are also other complaints against that same contractor that are existing right now, not be in the process of investigation.
And all the college should have been more diligent too, right? I think, from what I understand.
Mr. Chairman, part of the law provided that we do outreach and education to persons around the state, and we have done so with MNSCU. Our department, our labor standards unit, has met with MNSCU and has certainly informed, educated MNSCU in relationship to their bids, their contracts, and what needs to be included.
So you're being proactive and getting the word out.
Mr. Chairman, very, very much so. I think the Labor Standards Unit, I believe they had 8, maybe 9 sessions around the state last fall to educate about the prevailing wage, when it's applied, when it's affected, what the classifications are. I know the first one, I believe Senator Sparks was down in your area. I think the first one was down in Austin that we did. And then we did them throughout the state as well as in the metro area, including the state of Minnesota and including MNSCU.
Senator Carlson, did you have a question?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. When there's an infraction like that, is it actually logged on the, for instance, I have something here that's the license and certificate detail for a particular contractor, and there's no enforcement action, no information on there that's logged of any complaint or of any enforcement action. And you know, in this case, I don't know if there's the same kind of form, but in this particular case, on this particular contractor, I was made aware of an incident that has been going on, or the incident happened in 2003, and it has gone to the courts. There has been a court decision on it, and in fact, as it just so happens, it's in the Court of Appeals today on appealing of a particular ruling against a contractor. And I took this a little bit of an advocacy on here because I was staffing the booth at the state fair when the family came to me and asked me to look into it. And quite frankly, I became really upset because I tried to get information on this contractor from the Better Business Bureau and then from the department. The department, I was on in the telephone menus for 20 minutes before I finally found a place where a menu would actually take a recording. And by that time, I decided, well, I will drop my name as to who I am because I was actually looking for information on this contractor to see if they were safe to use. Because the person who had been injured by this contractor, their house burned, and the contractor did shoddy work, and they fired the contractor, got another contractor, the second contractor did everything right, and everything was settled, and the people decided to refinance their home. And they're people of means, so they had no problem with the repairs, things like that. But I guess to make a long story short, they tried to refinance, and the contractor had filed a $357,000 lien against their house. And they have been in court for almost 3 years now trying to get that lien discharged and now trying to get legal fees back. They've used up their savings. They've used up their IRAs. And they're now at the point where they wanted to just get this resolved so that no one else gets treated like they've been treated by this contractor. And also, they've given me the names of other people. When I did get a hold of the department, they said that they were investigating it. The last time I did talk to the department was in, I believe it was November. I can probably find that date. But I just pulled the license listing again today here, and in an enforcement action, none. And I'm wondering, is there some way that we can make this, to have some advantage? You said you were going to bring up some legislation. Give the advantage to the people who are trying to get work done by legitimate contractors. And when a contractor has had a history of this kind of thing and actually has had a judgment against them where the judge wrote in the opinion that this person actually committed fraud, because they fraudulently padded their insurance bills, they changed building permit times, lots of things like that. There's a lot of evidence there. And it's been an investigation, but yet there's no record. I'd like to see us somehow be able to protect people who are looking at the information from the department where they can make a judgment as to whether a contractor is suitable for hiring.
Okay.
I don't know. It's
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Speaker. Senator Carlson, I first thought you were going from prevailing wage problems and violations, but I think we ended up at either OSHA citations and violations or fraudulent citations. Public information, I do believe this to be true. I wish I had my assistant commissioner here, but if in OSHA, if it is a serious violation, and we have serious and we have non-serious violations, Mr. Chairman, it does become public record. It is public record as to a serious violation. Fraudulent violations, this would be in Charlie Durenberger's area that he does the investigation, and I can't speak with the great authority as to when we do find and we do prove that and we do recover, of course, significant dollars for persons. I cannot, Ms. Senator Carlson, I will get back to you. John?
Did he leave?
He stepped out.
Oh, good. Bring with one guy and he goes.
Amato, come here.
I will get back to you in regards to the fraudulent behavior that has been proved, where there is a John.
What is it in the court system?
We just have something to get back to, Mr. Carlson, with. You'll find out.
This is the residential
concern. I don't know what you.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. I just don't want to on tape state one way or another, as I probably can in the OSHA violation.
And it sounds like it's in the court system now. So, but you can find out generally, you know, about your issue. But it sounds like it's.
But Mr. Chairman, if it isn't, I would tend to agree with Senator Carlson. Once it probably should be public data.
Yeah.
If we find that there are bad actors that have fraudulently defrauded persons in the state, it's public data, and probably people should be aware of that or be able to obtain that information. And I just can't answer whether we can or not.
Okay, he'll get back to you, Senator Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
You made some good points there.
Commissioner, I just want to make sure that there's a place where a person can, you know, like the Better Business Bureau, for instance. The Better Business Bureau will not log complaints after legal action has started. That's fair. That, you know, now it's in a contest. But if I have an experience with someone and I want to log a complaint with the Better Business Bureau, that complaint is taken and then it's either upheld or it's discharged. But the record stays that it was a complaint that has been settled. And in this particular case now, the record of this licensed contractor appears to be totally clean. And I'm not sure if that gets, you know, this contractor's license expires on the 31st of March. And I'm wondering if there is going to be anything that's going to be logged so that this person either does not get their license renewed because of this kind of action, this kind of history.
All right, we'll look into it. Senator Bach.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Commissioner, if I received, I just need to some direction. If I received a letter from an anonymous letter from an individual that says, I've worked on a number of projects, and they list their employer, and they list what projects they worked on, but they didn't sign it for fear of their employer finding out that they hadn't been paid the prevailing wage, where would I refer a letter like that to get some investigation done when can a complaint be filed when there's not a name on it, when it's just an anonymous tip that his employer hadn't been paying him adequately, or how do we proceed with something like that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bach, we will we respond to all complaints. Obviously, we need to investigate. We need to make sure that we have the proper documentation, to come forward to either prove or not. Obviously, you in this case, you would have either the job site and or the company that was involved, the business that was involved. I do not believe that we need specifically the name of the complaint.
Okay, thank you.
And obviously, where would it go? You could either, Ms. Wade would probably be the first stop.
Senator,
Mr. Chairman, could I just add?
Sure.
Just a real quick thing. And Senator Bach, I think in response to that, as you sometimes receive letters and complaints to you about your action, or I remember when I was in the House, my actions, if somebody doesn't sign their name to a letter, I gave it a little less credibility than if someone was willing to sign their name to it. I not that there isn't a documentation that would prove this allegation, but I remember when I was a representative, Mr. Chairman, if people didn't sign their name to it, it went right there. Not saying I should have done that, but it's pretty easy to criticize folks if you're not willing to stand up and put your name to it. And I'm sure you've all received those letters. If you haven't,
and the ones that didn't sign, they're not the positive ones, are they?
But Mr. Chairman, it's kind of like a whistleblower.
This is different.
The individual, I'm sure, probably fears for their job. I mean, once there's a public investigation, the information all becomes public. I understand the apprehension on their part.
I can respect that.
I think
Senator
that makes
Bach.
Sense, Senator Bach, what you're saying. I mean,
I can respect that. I was just thinking about the letters I used to receive.
Mr. Chairman, I think they were from you.
Another day.
If it's on prevailing wage, you could just send them to my house. I would take care of them.
Senator Carlson, I wonder if you can, if it's on the same kind of a line of thinking that Senator Latz is working on some homeowners' bill of rights or whatever the issue, and maybe work with the senator and maybe get
Mr. Chair.
That direction too. It just came to light that I remember some of that. Vaguely, some of the titles of the bills that the senator is working on, and maybe you guys can connect a little bit.
Mr. Chair, we just spoke about it.
Oh, did you? Okay, fine. All right. I think that was a good visit with you, Senator Mr. Swigum and Commissioner. And
Mr. Chairman, thank you. The last thing I'd offer to each of you senators is if you have a constituent concern, a constituent problem, get to me directly. We will get back to you directly and with an answer. With the proper documentation, with the proper information.
My office has had a few dealings with Commissioner Swigum, and he's always been there.
He's always answered the questions, always looked into things, and he's taken me on a couple OSHA trips, too, that scared the hell out of me. But we looked at the 35 bridge one day, and holy cows, those people that are under there connecting everything. I don't know what they get paid, but it's not enough. I don't know what.
Mr. Chairman, you were holding my hand the whole time.
I was holding anybody's hand I could find. Anyway, I think we don't have a meeting Monday. Is that correct? We got a day off Monday, and then we get back at it pretty heavily. But okay, with that,
thank you.